Hello, this is Michael Steed, and welcome to my Topical Tax Roundup podcast. What have I chosen to look at in this podcast? Well, there's quite a lot going on in tax, as there always is. And so out of that vast bucket of topical issues, I've chosen to pick up essentially three broad issues. The government, as you will be aware from the 2012 budget, is very keen to encourage small, unincorporated businesses to transfer, if they wish, onto what is known as the voluntary cash basis, which I'm just going to refer to as the cash basis. Now, this was a budget 2012 proposal, and it is likely to come into effect in April 2013. So we've got a little bit of distance, but the reason for looking at it now is that the government has just closed off on an important consultation exercise. So we're a bit clearer about what's happening. Now, although they haven't released the results officially of the consultation exercise, there's enough to go on. And because this is such an important issue, or potentially such an important issue for AAT members, that I've decided to pick that. So that's my first, the cash basis from April 2013. The second one is in respect of IR35. Now, that's an old ticket, isn't it? IR35, been around since FA 2000. But there are two good reasons for having a look at it right now, and it certainly is topical. The first reason is that the government released some guidance on it, including what are known as the business entity test. So I'm going to have a look at that. And there's a scoring system to see whether you're at risk or less at risk from IR35 inquiries. So I'd like to do that. But the sort of second reason for looking at IR35 is that the government has also announced in the 2012 budget that the so-called controlling persons will be subject to PAYE by their engaging companies. So if you think of Ed Lester, who was one of the characters that sparked this off, he, as you may recall, was the head of the student loan company, and he had his own personal service company. So this proposal is that people like Ed Lester, who are in a commanding position in the organization, the so-called engager, here the student loan company, he should be on PAYE. So the point immediately at issue is that that trumps IR35. So I want to examine the relationship between those two issues. And then third, out of this vast bucket of possibilities for topical tax issues, I've chosen to look at the VAT journey, what the changes that were announced, as disastrous changes that were announced in the budget. There's been, of course, some backtracking there. And the reason that that is topical is that HMRC has just issued some leaflets and some guidance on that. Now, most of these are proposed to come into effect from the 1st of October, but one of them on listed buildings, if you like, so-called protected buildings, is due to come into play in April 2013. So I'd like to have a look at those as well. And we'll be having a quick look at where we are with pasties and hot versus cold takeaway food and premises and all those kind of good things. So there's quite a lot going on. So what I want to do first is to start with the voluntary cash basis. So here we go. Now, the government reckons that there are about 3.5 million, what they call individuals, who are trading, what you and I would call sole traders. And they're involved in sort of the normal trades, professions and vocations. And the government reckons on its own figures that of that 3.5 million folk, more than 3 million of those have a turnover below the current VAT registration threshold, which of course is 77,000. That's from the 1st of April 2012. And I think we've all sort of made this conclusion, but it's bizarre, isn't it, that somebody who's turning over £30,000 a year effectively has the same rules for constructing his accounts and doing his tax as a multinational corporation. And what this proposal is designed to do is to kind of free up and make simpler the whole basis for constructing accounts and therefore the tax calculations for 3 million people in the UK. These are sole traders, or they could be partners in small, normal partnerships. I'll discuss LLPs in just a wee while. But effectively, let's think of them as a group of sole traders under 77,000. The government's proposal is that they, from April 2013, be allowed to adopt a cash basis. Now, as we will see, there are some other elements in there as well. They will also be allowed to adopt. In fact, they'll be forced to adopt, in some circumstances, a simplified expense basis, for example, for cars, and they will have some choice over the normal basis or a simplified basis for other expenditure like plant and machinery. And I'll briefly touch on those as we go through it. So the government is keen to try and ease the tax system. Now, as we know, that's a sort of a rather hollow claim, isn't it? Whereas with one hand they're doing this, and with another hand they're imposing RTI, which will have some less beneficial effects on some traders. Okay, so we're looking for a simpler tax system for small businesses. Remind yourself, if you would, that this actually came from the Office of Tax Simplification, the OTS. It was their idea in the first place. And we'll have a look at what they proposed. So at the moment, there's nothing set in stone. We've just come to the end of the consultation exercise. The government is mulling it over even as we speak. So I expect that we'll get some draft legislation on the blocks by, at the latest, the December, which is the 3-month period, because you'll be aware too that the government now has adopted its own rule, if you like, that it will publish draft legislation 3 months before the budget. So I'm expecting that we'll get that in December. Okay, so cash basis. We'll talk about the simplified expenses which complement the cash basis in just a second. So what does it mean? Well, it exactly as it says on the tin. It's all about cash. Cash in and cash out. For income, it's what you receive when you receive it. And for expenses, it's what you pay when you pay it. Couldn't be simpler. Okay, so let's be clear then about who will be able to use the cash basis. Well, there's a list of them on the website, but I'll give you a feel for it. Effectively, it's most self-employed people. Okay, that's the key thing. The OTS originally said that small businesses with receipts up to £30,000, and that would be VAT inclusive if they are voluntarily registered for VAT. I'll come on to the VAT in just a second, but they would put a limit of £30,000. They said that businesses under 30 should be eligible to use the scheme. But the government is keen to explore this higher threshold, which is why they've gone for £77,000 in the proposal. Now, it's not clear to me, looking at the paperwork, whether that 77 will rise in line with the VAT registration threshold. The documents that I've read are silent on that point, so I think the jury's out on that. But my instinct is that it probably will rise with it, but I don't know that for certain. So, 77, and I stress these are effectively sole traders. Now, under the rules, the current proposal, HMRC is going to allow people to continue to use the voluntary cash basis until they get to a turnover of more than £150,000 in any 1 year. And at that point, they will be ineligible to continue. But the cut-off point is at the end of that tax year. And then from the beginning of the next tax year, they will have to go back to the normal accruals basis. Okay, so the people who won't be able to use a cash basis obviously will be those who are too big, so that is receipts of more than 150,000. Companies, that's the key thing. This is really for unincorporated businesses. But there are one or two other edge effects as well. For example, property businesses, even though they may be unincorporated, will not be eligible to use the cash basis. Now, I said that as part of the complement to the cash basis, we've also got a complementary simplified expense system. And there's an interesting twist here. The first and important point is that if you're on the cash basis, then you will have to use the simplified expenses system. And some of those include flat rate expenses, and I'll talk about those in just a second. But it also makes the point in this condoc, this consultation document, that any other business, apart from a company and a limited liability partnership, may be able to use the simplified expenses. So in terms of a simplified expense system, it's not just the very smallest unincorporated business, but it seems on the basis of this condoc that it's going to be larger businesses, which are not companies, not limited liability partnerships, so unincorporated businesses. So we're talking here normal partnerships, normal sole trades, who are above the limit for the cash basis, but they're still eligible to use this. So that emphasises, I think, the sort of the voluntary nature, at least from that point of view. So what do we need to know? I mean, how does the cash basis differ from the normal tax rules? Well, of course, all the stuff on UK GAAP and accruals and fair valuation and all that sort of stuff, we just don't need to consider it. And as far as the tax is concerned, we only pay the tax when we make the profit, when the cash is received, if you like. So what's left over will be taxable. Sounds amazingly straightforward, doesn't it? So you don't need then, and this is something that sort of touches on a concern of ours, I think, as AAT members, you don't need to keep lots and lots of records. So, you know, stocks, debtors, creditors, and all the rest of it. You just need, and in their words, and I quote here, you only need the records that are needed to run a business effectively. It also makes the point, this consultation document, that you don't need to understand about capital allowances, because very broadly, under this system, capital allowances are going to disappear. Now, there is a distinction, and I will make a distinction, between cars and vans, and in the vans category, read other plant and machinery, and I'll cover that in due course, but effectively, it means that you won't get capital allowances. That's the broad picture, but we'll see how the capital expenditure is relieved. In cars, we won't get it. We've got a different system. For vans, we will get it, and I'll explain that in due course. So we don't need to worry about capital allowances. Okay, let's move on. So how do I calculate my taxable income? What have I got to do? Well, the key thing is that it's going to have to be by reference to the tax year, of course, the 6th of April to the following 5th of April. Now, it's not absolutely explicitly said, but it's sort of you see it indirectly in this document, that if you go on to the cash basis from an existing business, then you've got to cut off your last set of accounts on the 5th of April. And then it seems, therefore, that the accounting has got to follow the tax year precisely in order to take advantage of that. So we are operating by reference to the tax year. So it'll be receipts within that tax year and payments made in that tax year. So what sort of expenses will be allowable then? Well, you will get those on your normal stuff, like your trading stock. And you will get it on some assets such as plant and machinery and vans. And the other thing here as well is that interest has got a rather interesting treatment, if you'll pardon the pun. Interest charges on bank loans do not seem to be allowable. But interest charges on hire purchase or leasing will be allowable, providing it's for vans and plant and machinery. And the reason it seems that HMRC is not keen on you getting tax relief on bank loans per se is because they're worried about people taking out a bank loan and then simply taking the cash out of the business and getting the tax relief on that. And I think that's the mischief that they're trying to stop in its tracks. Okay, so that's a sort of an overview on that, and we'll drill into some of those bits in just a second. But there is this rather weird treatment on interest. So it's going to be okay on hire purchase and leasing, but it's not going to be okay on normal bank loans. Okay, so let's drill down then. Let's have a little bit more detail on this cash basis. I think it's just worth stressing that it is not another accounting system. It simply throws all the standard accounting out the window, and it just substitutes a very simple cash in and cash out. So it's a bit like VAT cash accounting. We'll come on to VAT in just a second. But I do want to stress that it's voluntary. Nobody has to go out and do a cash basis if they don't want to. But it is available for businesses who are conducting, as I said, a trade profession or a vocation. Now, I've mentioned partnerships a couple of times, so I just want to clarify that. It's proposed under this consultation document that general partnerships, normal partnerships, if you like, could use the cash basis as long as the partnership meets the other entry criteria. And the partners, incidentally, have all got to be individuals, so you can't have a corporate partner in there. So it will apply to a partnership as well as to a sole trader. If you've got more than one business, you can still take advantage of the voluntary cash basis, provided when you aggregate all your businesses together, they meet the criteria, that is not more than 77. But there's one exception for that. If you are, say, got an individual who's a partner in a partnership that they don't control, sort of salary partner in a larger firm, for example, and they then go out and do some moonlighting and they prepare accounts and, you know, they're a sole trader in this sort of second sideline business, then that second sideline business, this bit of moonlighting, will be able to take advantage of the cash basis. Okay, still on the detail here, the conduct also covers businesses that are excluded. Okay, the first and most important of that, of course, is businesses subject to corporation tax, for which read companies. But you can't use the cash basis if you are an LLP. So businesses and other sort of quasi-corporate bodies like LLPs are not eligible to do it. If you've got a business that's registered for VAT, that is sort of voluntary registration, because obviously you've got to be under 77 here, but this business is not using the VAT cash accounting system, which is a cash in, cash out, cash is king system, just like the one we're talking about here, then that too is barred from entry into the voluntary cash basis. There are some other bits and pieces that are excluded as well, financial trading businesses. And also, oddly, some farmers that have averaging claim, that's profits averaging claims, and farmers who have a herd basis election on their stock, they are barred from being on this as well. And for what it's worth, you can't come onto the voluntary cash basis if you're a Lloyds member. Okay, now, I don't propose to go into this, but there are sort of rules about how you get into the system. It's expected that from 2013, most new sole trade businesses will be on the cash accounting system, providing they meet the criteria. As far as existing businesses is concerned, there's quite a lot of pick and choose here. You can basically come in and go out, not quite at will, but you can do it on an annual basis as far as I can see, providing you go by reference to the tax year, which means, of course, that you've got to close off your accounts if you're an existing business and then to start the next set of accounts under the new cash basis system from the following 6th of April. Right, now let's drill into a little bit on expenditure and deduction. So how's this going to work? Well, there's nothing wrong with the basic system of wholly and exclusively. That's not going to change. In other words, you're only going to get expenditure in your P&L here for expenses that are wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the trade. But of course, it's on a paid basis. If you've overpaid for something, like you've paid somebody in your family for it and it's an excessive charge, then HMRC under this system would expect you to scale it back again, effectively meeting the wholly and exclusively charge. Now, allowable expenditure on capital expenditure, this is actually quite fun. The point I think I'm going to make here is that if you go out and buy a car, under the new voluntary cash basis, you are not going to get any kind of tax relief on the capital expenditure. I'll deal with cars in just a bit more detail in just a sec. But allowable expenditure will include certain capital expenditure. Now, I just want to make this point. You don't get capital allowances. So let's think of a practical example. If you go out and buy a van or a lathe or some other bit of plant machinery in the course of your business, as I read this document, you will be able to, in effect, get an AIA on it, an annual investment allowance, although they talked about in terms of just writing off the expenditure. So the allowable expenses will include certain capital expenditure, but I make the point again, if I may, you won't be making capital allowance claims. So that does seem then that a van's going to be okay, you're just going to write it off, a lathe's going to be okay, you're just going to write it off. And if that creates a loss, well, so be it. I'll deal with losses in just a second. But it's very important to understand that under the voluntary cash basis, no deductions allowable for any kind of cars, be that a purchase, a lease, or any other acquisition. Oh, and by the way, cars includes motorcycles. So cars and motorcycles are bad, vans are good. You also won't get deduction for, well, let's call them the usual suspects. Entertaining, bribes, I love the way they included bribes, don't they know about the Bribery Act? The cost of borrowing, capital repayments, interest, and of course, no depreciation, because that's just simply not going to be an allowable thing, because obviously depreciation, amortization, they're non-cash and they're not in our system. So nothing for depreciation. Oh, and by the way, nothing effectively for capital allowances either. So that's just a run through of the areas where we won't be getting a deduction. Now, I said I'd talk about VAT, and I come back to VAT, and I'm now at that point. It's proposed that this cash basis is going to be on a VAT-inclusive basis. So all of your sums are going to be inclusive of VAT, which means, of course, that if you've got a sum that has got VAT on and you've had to pay out something, 100 plus VAT, it will go into your P&L on a VAT-inclusive basis. So that's pretty important there. Now, the other thing I said I'd come back to is losses, what they call, unbelievably, under the new speak, negative results. I'm going to call those losses. If, when you do your calculation, that's your all your cash in, all your cash out, you come to a negative number, what they call negative results, what we're going to call a loss, then basically you can only carry that one forward. So one of the disadvantages of this new cash basis is that you will not get sideways loss relief, which you can do in certain circumstances when you are trading, when you can take a loss sideways against other income in the year. That is not going to be allowable. So carry forward, yes, but no sideways loss relief. Now, if you are an existing business thinking of going into the cash basis, then you've got to think about some transitional bases. For example, you've got to, as I've already said a couple of times, just to reinforce that, you've got to close off on the 5th of April and then start your first period of account on the 6th of April. But if you are going across or bumping across one set of rails to another, you've clearly got to be clear about things like a double counting. So if you've already included a sum on your last year of accruals because you'd invoiced for it, you'd accrued for it, then you won't need to account for it again when you receive it in the first year of your cash basis. So you don't get double counting, but equally you won't get double credit for expenditure. If you've accrued for it in your last year of your normal accruals basis, you won't then get a second deduction for it on the first year of your cash basis. Okay, let's talk then about cars. We said we come back to cars, and I think it's worth doing that. Basically, and in tax speak terms, for cars and indeed motorcycles, there's no allowable deduction for unrelieved written down value. So you're basically not going to get anything if you're going into the system from a pre-existing business. And if you go out and buy a car under the new system, the proposal is that instead of getting any kind of relief on the expenditure of purchasing, maintaining or running a car, you instead, because all that's going to go, will get a fixed mileage rate allowance. And guess what? It's based upon the AMAP, the Authorised Mileage Allowance Payment System, that is 45p and 25p, with a slightly lower amount of 24p for a motorcycle. So that's pretty important that we understand that, that cars have no expenditure relief for the capital, the running, whatever it is. You simply get the AMAP that's been put into there. So on the basis of expenses, we begin to come down towards the end of this review of the cash basis. Let's have a quick word about expenses. There are going to be certain simplified expenses that this complementary part of the cash basis. Now, we've already talked about standard mileage rates for the use of cars and motorcycles, but there are two other areas where they're proposing in this integrated system flat rate expenses. The first is going to be for the business use of your house, and the second, there are going to be some flat rate adjustments for the personal use of business premises. So, flat rate expenditure for your house and flat rate for the personal use of businesses' premises. So, it's important we sort of understand that. Okay, as far as these flat rate expenses for the business use of your home are concerned, the proposal is that a taxpayer will be able to claim a standard amount for the business use of the home, provided they carry out core business activities for at least 25 hours per month. And if you're doing core activities at home for less than 25 hours per month, then you will not be able to make an allowance for that month. I think it's worth pointing out this is on a monthly basis. And the proposal from April 2013 is that if you work at least 25 and up to 50 hours a month, then the rate of claim is going to be a fairly modest £8 a month. So that's only going to be £96 per annum, isn't it? If you work 51 to 100 hours, then they double that to £16 a month. Still not wildly generous, is it? And if you work 101 hours or more, then that will bring you up to a slightly more generous £24 a month. But that's the kind of the three-stage level, three-tier system. But as an alternative system under this consultation document, HMRC is also proposing that you could, if you want to, go for a flat rate deduction, which would be set in the middle band of £16 per month. Now, that remains to be seen how that one pans out. But I think it's worth also noting that that compares, well, it's not hugely different, is it, to the £4 a week that's an exempt payment by employers to employees under Section 316A of ITEPA for home working arrangements. That, of course, is where people choose to work from home. Okay, well, I think that brings me pretty much to the end of this first section of this podcast. I think we're going to be moving on now, but I think we need to wait and see what HMRC concludes about this as a result of the consultation. As I said, the next big stepping stone is going to be the draft legislation in December. But at the moment, I think we conclude that this is going to be of interest to people. Now, the issue that we have to face as AAT members is whether that means that some of our clients are going to run down the road and try and do it themselves. I think it's easy to overplay that, because I think a lot of clients are simply not, certainly some of mine, are just not sophisticated enough to even understand the difference between the two systems. So I'm not sure that it's going to be a major problem. I don't see, as a result of this huge drop-off in the numbers of clients that we service, and in any event, there will be some good reasons for not going on to the cash system. And one of those obvious ones is when you're making losses, you get a better loss relief, as far as I can see at the moment, if you stick on the accrual system. Anyway, that's as we are, so that's as much as I'm going to say about the cash basis. What I'd like to do now is to move on to IR35 and the controlling persons legislation.